Morning. It is my pleasure today to introduce Sean Faircloth. Sean is actually an author. He wrote a book called Attack of the Theocrats, How the Religious Right Harms Us All and What We Can Do About It. Faircloth is Director of Strategy and Policy for the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science. Faircloth served five terms in the Maine legislature. In his final term, he was elected majority whip by his caucus colleagues, and that is a tough position to hold, I can tell you that. Faircloth served on the Judiciary and Appropriations Committee. He had an idea in Maine to create a discovery museum and led a four-year project from concept to completion in 2001 of a multi-million dollar, multi-story interactive museum. Maine Discovery Museum, then the second largest children's museum outside of Boston, of 25 children's museums in New England. He was an accomplished legislator, successfully spearheaded over 30 laws, including the Deadbeat Dad Law, which saved Maine taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars and was later incorporated into federal law. Faircloth also had numerous legislative successes in children's issues and justice systems reform. He's spoken around the United States about the Constitution, separation of church and state, children's policy, obesity issues, and sex crimes. In 2009, Faircloth became executive director of the Secular Coalition for America, advocating for separation of church and state and acceptance of viewpoints in American life. He's a graduate of Notre Dame with a law degree from University of California Hastings College of Law. He served as assistant attorney general and a lobbyist for the Maine State Bar Association and as executive director of the Secular Coalition for America. In his role, he has served Professor Richard Dawkins and Dr. Elizabeth Cornwell and was hired by the Richard Dawkins Foundation in 2011. He has served as an opening speaker for Professor Dawkins on two of his 2012 U.S. tours. He speaks widely on his own and strategizes about secular policy, organizing in connection with secular decade strategic plan, which Faircloth describes in detail in his book. I ask you to put your hands together for Sean.
Well, first, you can all hear me okay in the back and everything. Comes out all right. And I do thank you for having me here in Iowa. And thanks, Alan, for being my manager for the wonderful introduction. I will say second cab was the charm. The first cab, they did inform me after 20 minutes in that they wouldn't be there for an hour. And the math didn't seem to work there. So thanks for having me. I want to talk to you about Iowa and particularly about this group and this organization, what I hope will be a historic role for the future of the United States. Sounds bold, but that's really what I'm asking you to be involved with, is for something that can change the history of this country. And I want to go through some of the concerns about it. If I can get the PowerPoint to move forward, maybe I can't. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Yes, so that's me, lawyer, lobbyist, legislator. I don't know if you've done lawyer, lobbyist, but those three, usually the most hated. But I'm hoping some of the people in this room would consider lobbying at least at a grassroots level, and it can be for something very positive, as you know. And, yeah, I wrote this. I'll skip.
Okay, because what I want to talk about was the election in 2012. A lot of people said, yay, we all won, everything's perfect, right? And we get to join Bill Maher's church. And I want to just talk about how that is not how it is. This is the U.S. House map. You look at how much red and how much blue there is, and obviously there's some geographic distortion. But let's be clear. I write a chapter in my book about, I call it the Fundamentalist 50. These are members of the U.S. Congress. And let me tell you, most of them are still there. They are still in control of that U.S. House of Representatives, and that's really just the beginning. When you get down to the legislative control, it's also very significant. When people have a theocratic viewpoint, and I kind of I happen to be a former Democratic legislator, but I try to take a bipartisan view about this. That is to say, if you want your pure fiscal conservative Republican, well, that's one thing and that's fine. And I'm talking about when people have a theocratic view of government, and unfortunately how much that trend has existed within the Republican Party of late has had significant, I would say, a deleterious impact. And a lot of people, you know, they'll say, well, that's really out in some rural area that doesn't count, you know, when I'm speaking in New York or California, oh, that's just flyover country. But in fact, in some of the 10 most populated legislatures, the column on the right is the one that's controlled by people who have theocratic viewpoints today. That's the situation in this country. So at the grassroots level, things have not changed as much as people would perceive. And a lot of this has to do with what I call a fair class law of down ballot money. At the presidential level, I think, you know, money certainly counts there, but most everyone has a strong opinion one way or the other about Barack Obama or Mitt Romney. But I can certainly attest from my experience, you know, a lot of times folks don't even know the name of their local state representative, much less have informed opinions about them. We would hope that would be the case, but it's not a lot of times. And that's where I'd say money talks even more, because the average person at the mall doesn't even know who they are or what their stands are. So a nice pretty brochure, or 15 or 20 or 1,000, can really make a big difference. And it has, and the Koch brothers really follow that when they're trying to influence elections. So the demise of the religious right is much exaggerated, is my point to you, because they really had a strategy back in the 70s and 80s where they said, we're going to go to the school boards and the city councils and we're going to change this country. And you know what? The religious right did that. They were very effective in their efforts. And what we're talking about is changing that. And I want to show you where things are headed in terms of money. These are organizations, religious right organizations in this country, 109 million. I would note that for those of us who argue purely for separation of church and state, the amount of money nationally would be dwarfed by these dollar amounts here. The whole cumulative effect of those who speak for separation of church and state would be dwarfed by these numbers right here. But then you add 130 million for focus on the family. That is a huge budget organization. Sometimes they call Colorado Springs the Vatican of fundamentalism, which is where Focus on the Family is based. They want to change America, and already have, significantly. Then you have the late Jerry Falwell's organization, Liberty University, the propaganda they produce. They produce psychologists, by the way. Their psychology degrees look the same as anybody else's psychology degree. Their teachers look the same as any other teachers. Those degrees look all the same, and they go out and they teach. As psychologists, you know, will cure you of being gay, and that is considered the same as any other credential. So it's a great concern what they produce out of Liberty University and of its various advocacy organizations connected. Then you add, of course, this wonderful person, Sir Robertson, and we're talking about, with all of these groups cumulatively advocating on policy for the religious right in this country, we're talking about $1 billion. And I want you to understand the impact. You already know it, maybe, when you analyze issues. Like, go back to Prop 8. Look at the numbers, Prop 8 in California. Where are the dollars coming from? Where are the volunteers coming from? Overwhelmingly from religious organizations. I'm the very first to say, and very first to want to partner with, I was at the Interfaith Alliance meeting here in Iowa last night, very much want to partner with those progressive religious groups who do speak out for things like equality. But the reality is, the hard numbers are, that when it came to Prop 8 and so many of these others, the big money, the big organization comes from religious groups, the Mormon Church, the Catholic Church, and fundamentalist Protestantism combined in what I call the new unholy trinity in America today. But it doesn't reflect this country, and this is the interesting thing. The religious right, if you look at the demographic data, the religious right capped up at about 1990. They were building 70 to 90 around that period. They were growing. They've maintained from 90 to present. But you know what has been growing dramatically since 1990? Secular Americans. People who are not connected with religion has grown dramatically from just a few percentage points, and each year that number continues to go up. You're just looking at the 07 to 12 figures here, but you'll see dramatic growth even there, where depending on how you do the polling, and I read a chapter about this in my book, depending on how you did the polling, I think it could be much more, 25, 30% of Americans who are effectively secular Americans. But you know how many are represented in the United States Congress? One. Representative Kyrsten Sinema from the state of Arizona, who, by the way, is the first, I believe, openly bisexual person in the U.S. House of Representatives. Kyrsten's a fantastic, effective legislator. She got sworn in on the Constitution not on a Bible. She is one, a grand total of one in the entire United States Congress. Now, Senator Harkin, I saw the other day, he gave a talk where he said, you know, he said it in a diplomatic way. He basically said there's lots of elected officials who have that viewpoint, but they aren't saying it. They aren't expressing that viewpoint. And I understand that. I was a politician myself, and you want to deal with the realities you're dealing with. But what I would say to you is if there was a Congress, and unfortunately it's still not representative enough, this was a, if there was a U.S. Congress without any women, with only one woman, you'd say that's wrong. If there was a U.S. Congress with only one gay person, you'd say that's wrong. Not because there's any quota. I'm not talking about a quota. I'm just saying that it should represent society in some reasonable, reflective way. That's not true with secular values in this country, and I think we need to change that. They are deeply embedded in government, in those school boards. And you see some of that here in the state of Maine. And the problem is pervasive. And this is really important for what I'm talking about post-Iowa, is that most people, I hope by now, are aware of the issue of how religion is affecting women's reproductive choices. We hope that most people by now are aware of how marriage equality is denied often by a theocratic viewpoint. But I write in my book about 8 additional areas of law where there's religious bias today. It's terrible when somebody has a religiously biased attitude, that's wrong. But it's even worse when there's a statute that has a religious bias. And I talk about 8 more areas of law, most of which most people aren't even aware of, including in some really tragic areas involving the deaths of children, where there's religious bias. And what I try to illustrate with this is that real people are harmed. It's not about the manger in the town square so much, which may be unconstitutional depending on your legal viewpoint, but about real people being harmed by religious bias in our government today, and that bias is justified by religious doctrine. So it gives you examples of these problems. And I just want to go through one. Child care centers. Now, this is 13 states, not 50. But some states, like Alabama, if you just say, you just label your child care religious, you are exempted from the health and safety laws that apply to all of the child cares. And lo and behold, what happens? In extreme cases, children are put in situations of ill health or death. There was a terrible case where a child died alone in a van in the sun, and a lot of it was because there's no staff training. I'm not saying religious people are bad. I'm saying if you have any totally, completely unregulated environment, things are going to happen, and in fact have. So what we're looking at with this 10-point vision of a secular America is unity, something we agree on, whether it's religious people who are of the liberal persuasion or secular people, enticing people to a set of values, and that they're about human harm, so it's difficult to dismiss them, and also that we provide leadership on a wide variety of areas. Marriage equality and women's reproductive issues are on the table, I'm glad to say, but secularism is not as much on the table, and I think we need to get it on the table of American society. You folks in Iowa know more than about anyone else when you see Michelle Bachmann and what happened in the Republican caucuses last time, how extreme it got. We need a counterbalance, and that's what I want to talk to you folks about, and how we can help at the Richard Dawkins Foundation. Geography fans, this is Kentucky. I was the opening speaker for Richard Dawkins. I've had some great speaking opportunities. I did Barack Obama's welcome in Maine, and that was mainly because all the other my fellow Democrats mostly supported Hillary back in 08, so I was the one that left, so I got to do the welcome for Obama. So I've had some great speaking opportunities, but one of the biggest was with Professor Richard Dawkins. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with Professor Dawkins, but for those who might not be, he wrote a book first called The Selfish Gene back in the 70s. He is the most cited scientist alive today. And then he wrote another book about his 10th or 11th book about 6 years ago called The God Delusion. When I was his opening speaker in Kentucky, and I want to just explain the geography here, we were way out of a place called Eastern Kentucky University. Louisville's the big city. Eastern Kentucky is, you know, more toward West Virginia. It's a couple hours from the big city of Kentucky. We had an event where I talked about this 10-point vision of a secular America. We had 2,300 people show up in this room, in the true Bible Belt. And I gave this 10-point vision of a secular America, and this crowd was roaring. They were roaring in rural Kentucky for a secular America. The power of Richard Dawkins as a draw is really something amazing to see. I say among guys born before 1945 who have appealed to people born after 1975, you know, it's Jagger, Dylan, McCartney, and Dawkins. And this guy can really pull them into a room. And these people were so excited to see him, but they were more excited to see each other. Your remorse, I say, really? There's other people here in rural Kentucky who share my view and don't want religion dominating my life? Wait a second, this is great. And they had all these little local groups that got to meet each other. It was really a gratifying experience for them. But that's small compared to the next step, which is our Facebook page. I encourage you to visit it, Richard Dawkins Foundation official Facebook page. We get hundreds of thousands of people a week. It's growing. It's grown dramatically just since last fall. He tweets. YouTube, we have lots of speeches and so forth on YouTube and on our website. Now I come to the state of Iowa, and I don't need to overemphasize how important it is because you know your importance in the caucus system. But this is what I represented Stephen King back in May, and this guy, Stephen King, much scarier than Stephen King. And sadly for Iowans, I tell you, you know, someone who I travel around the country all the time, and this guy, a lot of times he represents Iowa because he says the crazy extreme thing. He doesn't represent Iowa, but to a lot of perceptions of people outside Iowa, that's representative of Iowa. I think that's really too bad. And really, this is Iowa, right? Major first with women's equality, African-American equality, equality for gay people. That's what Iowa is really about. And I want us to say that secular values, the separation of church and state, are important to that. And that gets down to some of the strategy. Alan invited me, and I came to the caucus process here this last cycle. And I can tell you, when I campaigned for the legislature, I saw Romney's events, and very well organized, very fancy, well-paid staff. I had more actual supporters at my kickoff for the legislature back in Maine than this guy had one of his final events before the election. Now, there was a huge crowd. And you know who the huge crowd was? Media. Reporters from Japan, from Spain, from all over the world. There's more people saturated into this town, this state, and this town than any place else during that lead up to the caucuses. And we think that can be very, very meaningful because they're looking for stories. That Eastern Kentucky event, we can do something with that. We can do something where you get a roaring crowd like I saw when Obama came. I think we can get some real enthusiasm. And I want to talk to you about our Get Religion Out of Government plan. And this involves that we have first a convention in 2014 with Richard Dawkins. I think we can get 2,000 plus people here in Des Moines for a big event with Richard Dawkins that will garner a whole lot of volunteers who are advocating for a secular America come the 2016 caucuses, by which I mean 2015, really, leading up to the 2016 caucuses. Then I want to talk about collaboration. That is here locally in Iowa. We can bring people from out of state, and I'll get to that. But we're talking about local leadership here, liberal groups, gay community groups, civil liberties groups, secular education groups, women's rights groups saying, we're going to help with keeping religion out of government. Doesn't mean you're against religion. It means you're against having religion in government. Next is we have a plan to have an Iowa field director on staff, just like a political campaign for a candidate, but it's a campaign to keep religion out of government, and we'll have them in Iowa on the ground in early 2015. Then, starting in spring 15, this is something that I can work with you on from the Dawkins Foundation perspective. We had that big event in 2014, get people rallied in this region, and you'll get people from Minnesota, Nebraska, from all over the Midwest to come to that event with Richard Dawkins. But then I went down to Florida recently. I gave a speech about this plan. And I was joking about, you know, Iowa vacation spot, but once I was done with the speech, I asked how many would be willing to come in 2015 to help bring America to a true set of secular values, and the majority of the people in the room said, yeah, I'm going to come to Des Moines, Iowa, and volunteer, and we will get you rotated throughout the entire 2015, from spring 2015 on, leading up to the caucus, have people from all of the United States coming here to volunteer and help with this effort. Yard signs, billboards. Alan had, you know, had this great idea of, you know, we'll have a billboard right as you land at the airport. I mean, it's really fantastic work that Alan has done to bring me here and talk about this idea and what we can do. Have a presence at the state fair. Have yard signs. Grassroots trainings. I'll do grassroots trainings with folks. T-shirted volunteers. You know, Alan did it where he was by himself a lot, I think, on healthcare back in 08. But let's have people showing up at all of these different events these candidates show up at, where they have a Keep Religion Out of Government t-shirt, they're ready, they're trained on issues, then we bring in some celebrity visits. We have friends like the folks from Mythbusters, Bill Maher, others who can come for 2015 events and really help juice up the excitement for what we're talking about, keeping religion out of government. Using the 10-point vision as a framework, we'll have trainings to talk about, look at all these issues where there's religious bias, so that we can give people a human reason. I believe that Joe Sixpack and Soccer Mom, that really when you go through these issues, most of them are on our side, and we need to give them that chance. The key part of this, though, we can do a lot nationally, the Richard Dawkins Foundation. The key part of this is an Iowa collaborative, that there's a lot of local leadership in this organization with the kind of groups like folks here to make this happen. Money contributed in-state so that we're not attacked. We'll certainly raise money out-of-state, but we want people in-state to contribute and say that there's local buy-in for this. Hosting, because we're going to have lots of volunteers coming in 2015, say, hey, we'll have folks here to be involved with this. Have media connection in the state so that we can start to generate local media and then also generate the national and international media by them saying, hey, there's some local coverage here, let's maybe cover this issue as well. And use that framework of the 10-point vision to humanize it. Because, you know, some people, they make fun of the 60s and all this. Remember when John Lennon made that statement and they burned all the Beatles records, everybody makes fun of hippies and so forth. But, you know, my parents' time, I have a lot of admiration for the values they had in the civil rights movement. When people started to say that they wanted to think differently about things, you know, and I feel like the word morality has been stolen by the religious right. Whenever you hear the word morality nowadays, the word morality means something to do with your naughty bits, right? And I think that is a degradation of the word morality. You know, when Bobby Kennedy and Dr. King in my parents' time were talking about morality, they meant, what about the people who are left out? What about the people who are in trouble in life? That's what real morality is. And I think the secular values, those values really are valuable, and they're central to what we believe as a country, and that's what we want to do. So if they can organize for intolerance and injustice, we can organize for reason and science and compassion and justice. And the Dawkins Foundation is, you'll see no bigger draw in that respect. I hope that you folks will say yes to helping out with this cause and keeping religion out of government, and then saying we want a positive secular vision of separation of church and state in this country, because I want to be in partnership with you during all of these years leading up to 2016, January 2016. Probably there's not much time for questions, but I'm happy to answer as many as I can, and thank you so much for hearing me out.
Giving to political campaigns?
No, that's $130 million is the focus on the family budget, for example. So no, that's an annualized budget. That is every year. So,
but not what they give to political advertising?
No, that's just their total budget for the organization. Now, focus on the family. They advocate on policy. I mean, that's the Richard Dawkins Foundation, among other functions. We advocate on policy issues. We'll get out there, for instance, we will lobby the U.S. State Department and say, you know, there's this guy literally in Bangladesh who blogged that he didn't believe in Islam, and they took a machete and chopped him to pieces. And we said, you know, there needs to be more civil rights advocacy, you know, in our foreign policy efforts in this country. So what we're talking about is all these organizations that I listed there have budgets devoted to affecting public policy, not just campaign contributions. There are some of that, but that's not all of it is. Yeah.
So last night, did I understand correctly, you met with the Interface Alliance?
Well, I just attended an event there. We're meeting with their executive director, I think, on Monday.
Yeah. I guess I'm curious to you see how it plays when your statistics show what, you know, 70% of people are affiliated with Christian going downward, more are affiliated with non-secular and growing. But yet, you know, you're talking to religious leaders and religious groups, sympathetic or open-minded religious leaders, but what do you say to those folks to not sort of confront or
I would view it the same as if I were a gay person in the 1970s, I wouldn't be going to straight and say, you're going to become straight, that's not the point. My point is, I'm a not-religious person. I do not believe in God, and frankly, I'll be happy to give you my reasons, and I hope you'll join me in not believing in God. But I'm not there for that reason. I'm there to say, here's this problem we have in our society. Who is starting to lord over us, literally, with statutes? Well, it's the religious right in the United States. And one thing that I try to do is give them specific examples, like these issues with children, the military, like I said, there's quite a number of them, and articulate that. And there you find Unitarian Universalists, United Church of Christ, a whole range, you know, a lot of Jewish groups to say, we're on board, we're okay with that. And that's really an alliance that we want to see.
If I could just add, when we were there last night, from the speakers, I don't think a single one said anything different than what Sean just said this morning of the speakers that were there. So the Interfaith Alliance, you know, it's definitely the separation of church and state and of the religious organizations.
So, yeah. How vulnerable is religious right with the cease reading groups in Washington, D.C.? And should that become kind of an issue here in Iowa as far as classing others are concerned?
Well, I think it is an important issue. I do write a little bit about that in my book. I'll give you another one that I think is even more of a scandal. To back up for people who don't know what C Street is, it's this rooming house in Washington. And they, at first, they got status as a church or a house of worship. You know, I kind of joke about that because the number of affairs going on in that place, it was like, you know, they were shouting, "Oh God," but that's not the kind of service they mean, you know. I mean, really, it was pretty bad. Sanford was at that place, not when he did his walk in the Appalachian Trail. Chip Pickering, member of Congress, Evan Farrell, was there. They weren't holding any services, but they're getting the tax exemption. So it really was a ripoff of the taxpayers. Speaking as a resident of the Washington area, I live way out. My rent is so much higher. These guys were paying this minimal rent, basically it's because they have this church organization sponsoring it. And C Street is a very right-wing group. They host the National Day of Prayer, and they've been right-wing since the 1930s. But let me give you an even worse one. You mentioned Senator Grassley. So he did this mini investigation, didn't get very far, as far as the mega ministers. Some of you may have been familiar with that. But we are working on a documentary on this topic. We're going to take the two victims each from these 10 areas of law and show the victims live, show what happened, you know, in some cases where children have died. Contrast that with mega ministers. Because some people think, and this is my objection, people say, well, it's just Benny Hinn or it's just Rick Warren, you know, like there's 10 super rich ministers. No. In every community in the United States, there are these mega churches, and there are often 4, 5, 6 ministers in each one. And they get something called the parsonage exemption. For those of you who have friends who are accountants, check this out. It totally exempts from your income the amount of your expenditures that relate to your housing. And I mean anything that relates to your housing. So the pool boy, everything that you can relate to your housing expense does not count as part of your income. Sweet. Rick Warren did this for decades. And then, when the IRS caught him at it, they found he wasn't even satisfied with that. He pumped up the numbers and was inflating the amount of his mortgage so that he would pay even less. And it's absolutely outrageous. So I want to take some of the lifestyles of the rich and religious. My point is, in Iowa, I can guarantee you there are several of these mega ministers, not living as high as Joel Osteen, not that, but living very, very well compared to the average citizen in Iowa. And I want people to see that this is around them and that the taxpayers, your tax dollars, are paying for these guys. And to be very blunt, the ones who use it most, usually the fundamentalist Protestant mega ministers, are the ones who are the most adamant about, we're going to tell women to be subordinate, that gay is evil, etc., etc. They're the ones who are raking the cash the most. And I want to shine a light on these people. And that's what this documentary will be in part about.
Others?
Yep.
One thing that has intrigued me about the arguments against DOMA, Prop 8, the search, why has it never been brought up separation of church and state? Because all of these have a religious basis and bias to them. Why has that not been the issue in courts?
Well, first, I think you're exactly right, and I wish you were on the Supreme Court, and thus the problem. As an attorney, I am fully convinced that if you were to interpret the U.S. Constitution in an accurate way, the way that Jefferson and Madison, and I write a chapter in my book about their thinking, if it was interpreted the way they intended it, a lot of these laws would be stricken. The reality in American politics today, however, is that we aren't even anywhere near what the Warren Court did. You know, when the Warren Court said no government orchestrated prayer in 1962, I wonder if that would have even gotten through the court today because of the rightward drift of the court. So the political reality is, if you want to get traction in America today, what we need to do, and what I'm hoping we could do in partnership, is build a movement so that there is a vocal secular movement. And I'm not just saying an atheist movement, I'm saying a secular movement that says we want religion out of government, and make it something that has traction. And there's no more important place to have that traction than Iowa, 2015, beginning of 2016. So I hope you'll partner with me. Everybody, friend me on Facebook, or visit me on the Richard Dawkins Foundation Facebook page.
Thank you, Sean. We really appreciate it. We have a token of our appreciation, which is a CD of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus. I'll hand it to you in a second here. That's fine. And I want to express our appreciation for you being here. We all know that we are immersed in politics. We many times think that we have a choice about whether we are going to be involved or not. The fact is that we don't have a choice. If we are silent or do nothing, then we have taken sides, and we have taken the side of our detractors. That's the way it works. Now, that particular phenomenon is aggravated by the fact that when your opponents are crazy, it's very difficult to outthink them because they aren't thinking. And so it's hard to put yourself in their shoes and be empathetic with what their perspective is, and therefore to develop an effective strategy to respond. So we can understand that the challenge is great and aggravated by that phenomenon. And we have people like Senator McCoy and Sean Faircloth who understand how it works. And we can be very thankful for that kind of leadership in the political process. And I encourage every one of us to be involved, be vocal, take a stand, and be a part of keeping this separation between church and state. And we all can play a role in that. Thank you. We have a number of great speakers coming up. In June, we are going to have all of these scholarship recipients here with their families. It is one of the high points of our Breakfast Club year. When we can see these young people and bring them together with their families, oftentimes families and young people who have felt very isolated in one community or another here in Iowa, and they can come here and look around and see that there are others like them and that there are supporters of them here. And so it is a real love fest, and I would encourage you to come. To bring others who might want to see the high point of First Friday Breakfast Club. It is a tremendous event. Our speaker is going to be Dr. Jason Glass, the director of the Iowa Department of Education. So it should be a great time, and I encourage you to be here. July, we are not having a meeting, but we are having the Michael Thompson picnic. And that is on what date? Is it 14th or 17th?
That's
the
second Saturday.
The second Saturday in July at Alan Vanderlinden's and Michael Thompson's home. Pardon? In August, Ambassador Ken Quinn, head of the Food Prize, is to be here. In September, Zachary Mannheimer, the head of the Des Moines Social Club, that is doing some new exciting things right now, is to be here. So we have some great speakers upcoming. We will look forward to seeing all of you and your friends here in the coming months. Thank you for being here today.